Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration. Collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
My call today begins, I think, maybe between 7, 10, who knows, maybe even upwards of 15 interviews at Hot Docs. And today was my first call with two filmmakers from Norway. So we did have a few technical issues, but I think we managed our way through them. Recruiting for Jihad is the name of the film. Starting first screening is Sunday, April 30th at 7:15. And this is a film you really do need to see. It's a challenging film. It's an education for sure on so many levels. But it's also ultimately, I think, really profoundly hopeful. And Ulrik Rolfsson and Adele Farouk, we talk about ISIS, and we talk about what it means to I guess be radicalized in a sense. We talk about hope, and we talk about community, and we talk about being accepted and included, and what are the implications for this kind of thing and this kind of an approach, this kind of an outlook, this kind of way of seeing the world ideologically and philosophically. And we talk about how these issues are really not about religion and about they're about so much more. So please do stay tuned for this interview coming up. And don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my own podcasting, for my writing. Lots of interviews coming up from Hot Docs. And if you want to support the work that I'm doing and get behind it, you can do that through patreon.com. And don't forget rabble.ca as well for more interviews. Coming right up, Ulrik and Adele, and talking about recruiting for Jihad. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by our first Hot Docs interviews this year for 2017, and I'm very excited about it. We're here to talk today about a film called Recruiting for Jihad with Ulrik Rolfsson and Adele Farouk. Thank you so much. Both of you joining us from Norway today. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for,
So how about each of you introduce yourselves so not only myself but our listeners can tell who is who on the other end of the phone.
Okay, I'll start. My name is Ulrik Imtiaz Rolfsson. I am a Norwegian filmmaker. I have done primarily fictional work before, and this is my second documentary. And I've directed and produced it and with Adele, who is the other director who's been working with me. And Adele, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi. My name is Adel Khan Farouk. I'm 25 years old. I'm from Norway as well. I have a Pakistani background. My parents are from Pakistan, but I'm born and raised here in Oslo. This is basically my first film as a director. I've been working with Ulrik on the previous documentary that he made as a researcher and a photographer. And my background is, I'm a journalist and an author. So that's where I come in, and this is my first movie.
So thanks for that, guys, and thanks again for joining us today. And I'm, as I said, congratulations on the film. I mean, what a challenging, hopeful, and yet profoundly disturbing film on a variety of levels. Tell me something. Why? At what point in the making of this film did you maybe say to yourselves, or maybe you didn't, what have we gotten ourselves into?
At several points.
I bet. And I would imagine maybe you'd thought about maybe doing a documentary on, say, football or maybe Norway's hockey team or something like that. Might have been a little more up your alley.
Well, actually, the shooting started when Adele came to me and said, I've gained access to this Islamist. That is, at this point in 2014, he was quite infamous and he's been made a lot of shocking interviews with newspapers, but nobody really knew who he was. And Adele came to me and said, I have access to him. And should we make a film? And I said, sure, let's do it. Here's the camera. But my first really shock came a year after that in 2015, when Adele had filmed for a year, and then all of a sudden Charlie Hebdo happened in Paris. And I realized that the guy we were filming were praising these terrorists and their actions were actually guided towards the likes of us journalists, and that woke me up and said, what are we actually doing here? You know, what are we filming? Who are we filming?
So before the filming even started, the two of you together didn't sort of have sort of bigger conversations about what all this means. You just thought, wow, we've got access, we've got the potential for a great story here. Let's go and see what we find. Is that so really investigative in a sense?
Yeah, basically that was the thing, because the thing was that, you know, me and Ubaidullah, the main protagonist in the movie, like we have basically like a similar background. Like he has parents from Pakistan, I have parents from Pakistan. We both love football, Manchester United, and both are born here, you know. And, you know, for me, it was very, I wanted to find out, like in the beginning, I wanted to find out why we, like, he's 5 years older than me. But the thing is that I still wanted to find out why he went that way and why did I go my way, and, you know, find that change. Like, when did it occur in his life? But the thing is that we didn't actually, the movie, you know, I was just, Ulrich just, you know, gave me a camera and kicked me in the butt and, you know, just said, go film. But the thing is, like, in the beginning, I wasn't sure what I was filming and, I was just, you know, I found this guy very interesting, you know, and I thought, you know, what the hell, I should make something on this guy. And, you know, after a year, after Charlie Hebdo, things got pretty serious. And that's like when you're like, just like Ulrich just said, it was, we just asked ourselves, what the fuck are you, you know, sorry, my language, but what have you got yourself into? And then the attacks in Copenhagen as well, and, you know, it just became a long line of, you know, different incidents that just, you know, occurred at the same time during filming. And then ISIS was created, and, you know, we just thought, you know, let's just tag along and let's just see what it takes us.
Adele, you know, you just said something that really struck me in the film. And you talked about, you know, similar schools and from Pakistan, your upbringings to Norway. There's a sense of, I think, humanity or normalcy or you know, almost, you guys almost level the playing field in a way with respect to folks who are involved in this kind of, what we would call anyway, I think, radical kind of movements and understandings of the world and of religion and so on. How, you must have been asking that question throughout. How come this guy and not me?
Yeah, the thing is that, you know, like I said, I've been asking this question a lot of times. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, a lot of my friends, after watching the movie, have also asked me, like, you basically had the same background. And what made you go that way? And what did, you know, that way? And
yeah.
But we don't have any solutions, right? Like, we haven't found answers for that. But the thing is that I think that And what Ulrich thinks too, like we think that this environment or these guys have found more love and been more accepted in this group than in society. Like, I think that's the thing. Like, they've been feeling that they've not been part of society for so long, and they finally, you know, friends that, you know, actually just, you know, means everything to them. And I feel like I've been, you know, been supportive all my life. I had, you know, a good childhood, good friends, great parents. And I don't think that, I think Wadilla has had the same thing in his childhood too, because, you know, during my research, I found that we had basically parents, our parents are basically from the same place in Pakistan too. Okay. And, you know, he's very integrated. But the thing is that it just struck me that I really don't know where it went, you know, where it all went to hell for him. So, yeah.
Well, you gotta remember that at the time when we started to film him, there was no ISIS.
Right.
And all these Charlie Hebdo and the those attacks hadn't happened. And at the time we started to film him, there had definitely been terrorist actions happening, but they didn't feel as imminent and close,
right,
because it didn't really happen right then. And it was that the sentiment of the world was very much against Assad in Syria. You know, Assad was hated a lot. You know, everyone said, you know, we must stop this guy. And so we're filming this guy, and we're learning that he supports ISIS. And nobody really knew what ISIS was at that point.
Right.
It was brand new. We learned more and more. But the hideousness of ISIS has sort of come to light after that. And so while we are filming, the tension is growing and the heat is building in the world, I'd say.
Yes.
And also the anti-terror laws in Norway are created while we are filming.
Right.
So things that he's doing in the beginning is not illegal. But during the film, the course of the filming, it becomes illegal. So we're not, I mean, we're kind of growing and experiencing the growing pains of the filmmaking while we're filming this guy. And we didn't realize that he had become so interesting and that things will take the turns it took.
Well, it's so interesting.
No idea.
It's so interesting. Like, it seems to me that so many documentary filmmakers kind of get in. They have an idea. They have a story. They have a sense of where things are heading. But then, you know, it isn't this part of the craziness and the complexity of being human, right? Our stories change as we go along. And like you say, I actually interviewed Emmanuel and Daniel Lecomte, the directors of Je Suis Charlie. I don't know if you saw that film, but at the Toronto International Film Festival back in 2015. And so, yeah, very much a part of what was going on historically and so on. So, yeah, it was really... So you guys, it's you know, as documentarian as documentarians, you know, as storytellers, you're in the middle of this, you know, history in the making, and isn't that kind of what's so, I don't know, tragically complex and tragically beautiful about being human, right? The story changes as you go along, and I was fortunate enough to interview Emmanuel and Daniel Lecomte at Toronto National Film Festival about their film Je Suis Charlie, and saw, you know, sort of almost in a sense firsthand from a filmmaking perspective, you know, the effect of that and the impact on them personally as well. As you guys saw laws changing, as you guys were watching the news and reports of these things were coming in, how was it affecting you as, you know, as filmmakers, as journalists?
You know, the thing is that, you know, we're people, like, we have the same, you know, color on our blood. And the thing is that, of course, when you, you know, see atrocities committed to people in Syria and Iraq, you get shocked. And the thing is that when you actually are filming a guy who actually, in many terms, supports these things,
right,
because it feels like, you know, it's, you know, I have a Muslim background, you know, I'm not so practical about that faith, but I still, you know, I have a Muslim background. But for me, it was shocking, you know, to think that this guy actually support attract crime committed against humans, and and still filming him was sometimes I just wanted to give up. It was
right.
It became too much at moments, but at times. But I felt like I still had to, and I still had to film why he. I was still trying to figure out why he became this way. But in the end, it was just a film of how he started. Operated, and I think that became more and more interesting of how he talks to people and how he welcomes them into Islam and stuff like that. And I felt like that's more important. And maybe I don't like what he says and don't support what his actions and he's, but hey, I still have to make this movie because I want to show people or the audience with Ulrich and show them a window into this, this group of fanatics, and show them, show them as humans, but also show them as, what they really are. Like.
Well, as he even says, as Abdallah says, he says that he wants to show how Muslims are from the inside. I think was the direct quote, and in a sense,
yeah.
You guys as filmmakers are trying to bring that same perspective, but from through a different lens.
Yes, and that is always hard when you make a film about people who are so much hated and will our lenses and our microphones actually help them, and why did he want us to make a film about him?
Right.
That was a big question for us, because We didn't want to be a part of his operation.
Right.
But we still saw that, that his thoughts and his words are still out there. Any kid who wants to listen to his words, they can just go on YouTube and it's there. I mean, it's hours of his words are and preaching and everything is there. So we couldn't stop his words. What we could was to give his words some context.
Sure. Yes, it's good.
To see where he come from, where he comes from, and how he operates. And I'd say that the film is not so much about him, because he's sort of static in the sense of his beliefs doesn't really change throughout the film, but he goes from a talker to a doer.
Right.
He goes from someone who actually contributes, and also we see his actions and how they affect others, and how he preys on weak souls, on people who need help, obviously, and he gives them support and he gives them a purpose of being, and that's what they're searching for, but the purpose of being he offers is
you mentioned that you have a Muslim background of a sort. I mean, I'm interested to know from both of you, how much of this do you think really, having spent several years now on the inside, I would imagine researching and so on, and having an awful lot of internal internal conflict and internal conversations. How much do you think this is really about religion? This is really about...
It's not about... The thing is that I don't think it's about religion. I've never thought it... the thing is that you find radicalization in different forms. You can find him, there are right-wing extremists who are radicalized, and there are Islamists who are radicalized. I think it's not about religion. It's about, not feeling like you're part of society, feeling like you're alone, feeling,
right.
Feeling that you're not accepted. And I think that's more to it. It's not about religion. It never has been. Yeah, there are maybe some, phrases in the Quran that legitimate war, but there are also some, but the thing is that those phrases are a part of a bigger context. And if you think,
sure.
If you only read those phrases alone, you would probably think that Islam is probably a dangerous religion. Or even if you read some phrases from the Bible, you can still think that, the Bible is a, dangerous religion if you don't know about, the Christianity. But the thing is, it's not about religion. It's about being a boy or a girl and not feeling accepted in the world and not, trying to find your place in the world and trying to find out who you are. And in the middle of this, you, like Luke said, you probably are a vulnerable soul. And you know, you raise questions and you ask questions, but nobody gives those answers. And then you find answers, from people who, you know, gives you the love and support that you have never found in your life before.
I think
at least my opinion.
I think it's remarkable that you take such a huge global potential catastrophe, frankly, with respect to, you know, terrorism and relationships and the breakdown of political boundaries and all kinds of things, and you reduce it to acceptance and love and community. Honestly, guys, I think that's utterly brilliant that hey, you know, the solution is not that complicated after all. You know, we need to, in a sense, and I don't want to oversimplify this because it's not simple at all, but this sense of building community and what does that mean for you and I? What does it mean for teachers and parents and friends and religious leaders and politicians, right? As we try to make sense of this crazy world we live in.
Yeah, well, it's as you say, it's simple, but it's also complicated in the sense that, you know, would these people want to be included? How would they want to be included
right.
in society? In what way? I've spent a couple of years in the States, and the difference to Europe is that you have freedom of religion in a much stronger sense in the States, and religion is much more viewed upon as a, and I'm assuming it's the same in Canada, but it's more viewed upon as a personal right to have a belief, and you shouldn't, as a society or the government or society, shouldn't interfere.
Right.
And so a respect for religious thought is much more accepted in the States, whereas in Europe it's much more you have to be our way or you're not included. If you don't act exactly like Parisians, you won't be a Parisian, or you won't be French, or you won't be English, or you won't be Norwegian or Swedish. I mean, the segregation between the cultures are much more evident, even though people are allowed to live out their culture in more significant ways in America or in the States
sure.
or in Canada.
Where do you think that sense of division comes from? I mean, I think that's why I asked you that question about, you know, is this a religious problem? I wonder, you know, having studied philosophy for so many years, I often think that these questions are about knowledge and about what we know and how we know. And here's Abdallah in the film saying things like, you know, we want to get back to Islam in its most purest and complete form, but it's going to be according to our interpretation of it, right? And so there's a real contradiction there. So, you know, I just wonder if, I mean, I'm sure that certainly feeds into that division that you're talking about. But it is kind of mind-boggling, you know, to wonder, where does that come from? Is it something we get at school? Is it something we get at church? Is it something we get at community, you know, events and so on from our friends, you know, us and them?
I think it's everything. I mean, everybody
right.
gets
yeah.
that division.
It's good.
So it sort of, it builds up. It's
sure.
not entirely the parents' fault or entirely the school's fault or the society's fault at large. It's complicated, but it starts with a sense of not being one of the majority.
Right.
And when you don't feel as a part of the majority, you take shelter in feeling a part of the minority, and you find strength in being a minority.
Sure.
And at that point, the division has started, and you say it's not only the majority who look upon you as a different person, that you as a minority also find comfort in being different, and you kind of try to overemphasize being different, because that gives you a sense of being included in a smaller but still significant community of minority. It's like Ubaydullah. Our character in the film, he seems to be so well integrated, but he still
Right.
Hasn't felt a success. So it feels to me that he wants to be successful, as we all do. But having failed maybe academically, having failed at being an athlete, he was a football player and then he became a referee. Having failed at these things, it might be that he found some, you know, he found the purpose of being successful, or he found himself to be successful in the, amongst Islamists.
At one point in the film, you mentioned that he really seems to enjoy the spotlight, and you talk about well, you sort of give us the impression that he's getting a real kick out of the questions and the interviews, and even the fact that he allows you this kind of access really does raise some pretty interesting questions.
Yeah, well, definitely. It you know, why does it let us make this film? Is it just because he wants the PR?
Right.
Because he loves it so much. What do you think about that, Adele?
The thing is, you know, in the beginning, you know, everybody has, you know, even after making this film, like, we knew about it from the start that there were some rumors that Ubaydullah was, like, super, you know, PR horny. Like, he loved to be in the spotlight.
Did you just use the phrase PR horny?
Yeah, I think
that's actually an expression in Norwegian.
That's a good one. I actually don't think I've heard that before, and if I have, it's just
that's
good. I might have to borrow that, guys. I hope you're okay with that.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. But the thing is that, you know, in the beginning, like you would, like when I the reason why I approached him, one of the reasons was also because he was so much in the media, like
right.
He would. Like, basically everything he said about, you know, radical Islam, or his thoughts about the America going to war in the Middle East, like, he always made the headlines, you know. And I thought, you know, he loves to be in the spotlight. And we even have some clips that we haven't even included in the movie where he says that, you know, that where are the cameras? We have to make this movie because, you know, I want to show myself. Like, so in the beginning, like, he is sometimes verified the portrait or the rumors that I already knew about him, that he loved to be in the spotlight. And even after, you know, during the movie too, like when we were during the movie when I was filming, he was like asking and telling me, this movie has to get big. This movie has to get big. This was, you know, kept saying that. So, you know, he, in a way, he got what he wanted. Like, the movie has gotten really big. It's a huge success in Norway. And the thing is that he... Even though he's sentenced to 9 years in jail, and that's a lot of time. And I don't know if I can't really say anything about that, but I think that, you know, during those years, you're probably going to think if it really was a good idea to, you know, be in a spotlight like that. And I was still, even when he invited me to film the last trip to, you know, Gothenburg with 18-year-old Peter, that
right.
was, you know, also... stopped from you know, joining ISIS. The thing is, also then I was, you know, I was in shock when he invited me, or not invited, but when I actually found out what his plans really were, because I didn't know anything about it. I was just, you know, he just called me and, you know, you just have to bring a camera and that's it, and I will tell you what you got to film when you come. And the thing is that when I started filming, I was in shock, but I also thought, you know, this is probably maybe the reason why he wanted me to, you know, film this is because he will, you know, get the PR. He will, you know.
Well,
get the,
you know what?
And
the thought I just had, Adele, as you were talking here, was maybe ironically, in some crazy way, you were providing some of that warmth and love and community, in a sense, and you were providing access to him. You were becoming a friend. Is that a fair comment?
To be honest, that is a fair comment. You know, I have, you know, the thing is that when I was little by the line, these guys, I went even to England, I went to Denmark, and I was, you know, met with a lot of love. These guys had a lot of love for each other, and even for me. I think being a Muslim was, I think it was more easier for him to, you know, not develop feelings for me, but, you know, accept me.
Right.
But the thing is that when I was with them, I didn't feel like I was, you know, they included me in talks. They included me in their during meals, and we talked. We had a good time in a crazy way, you know.
Sure.
I never felt threatened.
There's a beautiful moment in the film where you're both walking down the street. I think it's the two of you. I can't really tell because I don't know who's behind the camera. And he looks over and he says, "Hey, should we go and get a coffee over here?" And I just it speaks to the testament of that relational. It seems to me, anyway, that relational component.
You're right. The thing is that me and Ubaid Allah, we still have I haven't talked to him for over a year now. But the thing is that there were some moments where we just talked about football and just talked about Manchester United and the Premier League and you know common stuff like that.
Yeah, sure.
My lads, you know, my friends, and it was just strange to just actually feel like. This is actually just a human guy, you know. This is just a human with, you know, feelings and stuff. Yeah, he you know, burns for, you know, bleeds for different agendas. He has different agendas in life, but basically, he still have these, you know, same needs, the same need for love and the same, you know, need for being accepted. So I felt like he's a human. It's very easy to demonize him, but the thing is that we became actually not friends, but I got good tone with him, you know.
Sure. So sadly, we are going to have to wrap up the call here in a couple of minutes. And again, guys, I wanted to say thanks for your time and for the film, and congratulations. I wish you well at Hot Docs. I think the first showing is going to be on April 30th. We're going to do our best to get the interview out really soon. What did you guys learn? What did you take away from this? I mean, obviously, that's a very big question.
It's a huge question.
But, you know, the warmth, the love, the community, you know, we've talked a lot about that.
It is. The most shocking part for me was that these guys don't speak hatred all the time.
Right.
You know, it's the relationship is based on love. The relationship is based on brotherhood and warmth. And I was shocked by that. And I learned a lot from, you know, it's not fear that brings them together. It's actually love. And I think that, Adele said it too, but I think it's part of the fact that these guys might have not encountered this much love elsewhere. And it bonds them together. And I think that's also why it's hard to break it up, because it's bonded and it's glued together by care and love.
It's good. Thank you both for your time today. Thank you for a challenging and ultimately, in my opinion, a very hopeful film and a beautiful film and one that I think everyone really needs to see. This is something that affects us all. And are you guys coming to Toronto?
Yes, we are.
Excellent. Well, perhaps we'll get to actually meet face-to-face and shake a hand or two. Again, congratulations talking to the filmmakers today for recruiting for Jihad, playing at Hot Docs starting Sunday, April 30th at 7:15. Thanks for your time today, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.